Well, hello and welcome to another edition of Shout to the Top here on NLive Radio. I'm your host, Nick Petford, and today, in advance of Graduate Fashion Week, we're talking about, you guessed it, fashion. We'll be joined by Gavin Douglas, Jane Mills and Emmeline Childs from the university, and Jonathan and Natasha, two final year students, telling us about what inspired their runway shows. We're also talking to Northampton footwear designer Guy West, and looking at the link between fashion and leather, the latter, of course, a speciality at the University of Northampton with Dr. Mike Redwood. So are you ready? Well, my first guest today is Gavin Douglas. Now, Gavin's first degree in fashion was awarded by the University of Northampton in 2004. Now, having been successful in presenting collections at catwalks worldwide, along with private commissions from the Royal Opera House and Harrods, Gavin rejoined the university as senior lecturer in fashion in June 2014. He teaches on all pathways of the fashion degree and on postgraduate qualifications in design and leather technology. His research interests are 3D garment construction, Black British fashion, and equality and diversity within fashion more generally. His live projects and events have been staged in London, Paris, New York, and the Caribbean. And in 2020, he was appointed trustee of the prestigious Graduate Fashion Foundation, which is a charity bridging the gap between education and employment. Gavin Douglas demonstrated the will, the drive, and a certain amount of charm, which doesn't hurt. And that's a brilliant quote from Tom Ford. Gavin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, look, with such a stellar CV, it's hard to know where to start. So I guess let's start at the beginning. Gavin, how did you get into fashion?
That's a good question. I've always had an interest in art and design and creating. You know, as a young person growing up, I was always drawing, painting, sticking things together, watching Blue Peter. A little secret about me as well. I've got a Blue Peter badge, which I'm very proud of, and has pride of place at home. So I've always been a creative. And from that, I did my GCSEs at school in art-based subjects, did really well there, and then went on to college. I did a BTEC National Diploma in Design. So that looked at all areas of design, really. So I was looking at, you know, fine art, 3D design as well, and also fashion and textiles as well. So I went to college, did that. Then I went to university. You might know it. It's University of Northampton. So yes, I am an alumni of the institution. And then I did fashion here at Northampton as a student. From that, I went off into the industry, started my own label, and the rest is history, as they say. Really enjoyed it, really enjoying it. And, you know, that's what I do at the moment, as well as teach.
A question, really. So Harold Tilman, right? So this is the British Fashion Council's longest serving chairman, former owner of fashion retailer Jaeger, is calling on the government, and I'm going to quote, to save the bright young minds of our creative industry. Now, he's arguing, Gavin, that the pandemic has hit the world of fashion, design and the creative arts hard, especially those in higher education universities. So, you know, given that, what would you like to see being done to support the next generation of talent?
I think it's about acknowledging the talent that we have that comes out of the UK. You know, we're world renowned for what we do. The pandemic has hit everybody hard, and it's about utilising some of these strategies that we've discovered during the pandemic and using those to support us moving forward. I think one of those, you know, in terms of what I found is utilising and using technology, working with students to develop their technological skills and developing those. I think there needs to be more acknowledgement about what fashion brings to economically to the UK as well. There's a lot that it offers, a lot that it brings, and financially, it is one of the biggest contributors to the economy in the UK as well. The support needs to be had.
You spoke there a bit about digital. So how do you think the digital world will impact on fashion? It's going to impact on most things we do in life. But what is digital fashion? Is it even a thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, technology has had a big influence on fashion, and particularly, you know, currently at the moment. We, historically, we've depended on going into the high street, trying on clothes, touching and feeling, whereas with developments within technology, what we can actually do now is try on clothes digitally. So there is technology available that allows us to scan our bodies, put our measurements into a computer, and actually fit clothes online. So we're able to see what clothes look like on our own bodies through a computer screen. We're also able to do other practical tasks and elements that we would traditionally do by hand within an atelier or studio using technology, so pattern cutting, so the craft of making the original patterns for garments. That can also be done with by using technology as well. And it's something that our students at Northampton have really picked up on over the last couple of years as well. So it's having a huge influence on fashion, how we design and how we dress as well.
Look, Gavin, as a trustee of the Graduate Fashion Foundation, you're keen to raise awareness of the race inequalities that prevent career opportunities for fashion students. And you've said, I have to say very, very persuasively, that there needs to be more recognition of the cultural capital people of colour bring to the industry. Also needs to be greater awareness of the ethnicity award gap and measurable actions required to make progressive change, not just lip service. So Gavin, what are the barriers that prevent young Black British people from becoming leading fashion designers in the UK, and what needs to change?
There are quite a few barriers that are preventing young Black British people from becoming leading designers within the UK. I think what we need to do is first acknowledge what the issues are and create an awareness of those issues. When I kind of look at the industry and look at some of the gatekeepers of the industry, there is a limited representation of people of colour who can really make impactful changes. When we look at the British Fashion Council, some of the key gateholders, well, I'd say the majority of the key gateholders there who can influence change are white British. That has a kind of disempowering impact on the lived experiences of people of colour and designers of colour who want to operate in the same way as their peers do. Simply because when you have leading boards that don't have representation within them, it does make it more difficult for them to resonate with the experiences of Black and brown people. So it's important to have that representation there. And that exists within the industry and also within HE as well. There needs to be representation of all people from all parts of society that are on these decision-making panels and are able to kind of embed change.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, but Gavin, your massive role that you've got then in terms of being a trustee of the GFF, I think you can certainly be an inspiration to kids from all different backgrounds and get people into the industry, get talent where it's needed. Kind of on that, I mean, I welcome your thoughts on international fashion and culture. We've both been, you and me went to India a few years ago for a fashion show. And for those listening and not been to a country like India, to me, one of the striking things is the range, the vibrance and the colour, you know, the traditional dress that you see there, which is, you know, as someone like yourself, Gavin, a fashion, without putting words into your mouth, must be inspirational. But what can we learn, right, from other cultures and traditions? And if we do use them for inspiration, how do we make sure that we don't end up exploiting them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that the key word there is learning and educating as well. So, you know, it is important to learn and open up your awareness about other people's cultures, what their lived experiences are as well. But it's also important to acknowledge that as well and do your own research about it. It's not okay to kind of take from people's culture and use it without educating yourself about it, really, or without acknowledging it. And it's also important to kind of compensate that as well. I think within a fashion design context, what generally happens is cultural appropriation is that you'll find fashion designers can, you know, use a particular concept or culture or religious reference and use it to capitalize themselves and their brand without really acknowledging where that information or what the context is as well. And it's important that happens when doing so, when kind of referencing other cultures that aren't your own.
Well, welcome back to Shout to the Top. I'm Nick Petford and I'm chatting to Gavin Douglas. Gavin, there's another quote about you. Gavin Douglas is dressing women the way they want to dress for men. Now, this is a great quote from Vogue, but can you explain a bit more about it and your own unique design style?
Okay, thanks, Nick. So my own design style, I would say, is high-end and luxury. I tend to use different types of leathers, leather skins, silks, and I do like to kind of embody luxury within my work. So you'll find a lot of beading crystals, draping as well, sometimes some fitted quartz corsary, and I also do bridal wear. So I think my designs are quite innovative. They're also timeless. And I think once you've seen a few examples or images of my work, you'll start to see a signature that comes through within the collar and the cot and the silhouette as well.
You're also involved in private commissions. I mean, as somebody who's not involved in the industry, I mean, explain a bit to us what is a private commission and how does that side of the industry work?
So there are two parts to a private commission, really. As a designer, so I used to showcase at London Fashion Week on schedule. Part of doing that is creating collections of roughly around 30 to 40 full outfits that are shown and developed for a catwalk presentation. What I started to do, rather than doing full scheduled shows, was to go into the kind of bespoke industry. So the bespoke industry, consists of working with brides, so doing bridal wear, and also occasional wear as well, and on occasions working with celebrities. How it works is that the client will get in touch. They may have seen a piece of your work on a website or in a magazine or media. Get in touch, express an interest, say, I've seen this garment, I like that, I'm going to this event, can you design something for me? The first question I'll probably ask in a nice, polite way is, what's your budget, in a roundabout way, and then we take things from there. Yeah. So it will go through a series of consultations where we'll work together to look at fabrics, colorways, any kind of embellishments. So we'll do that together. I'll do a design, do a consultation in terms of the fit and style, what I think would work best for the person's body shape and fit. I also ask them to show me pictures of, them in their favorite garments as well, to give me an idea of what they like to wear as well. So once we've done that and gone through the design stage, we'll then do a fitting. So we'll fit something that's called a toile. Yep. Now, the toile is the first garment that you make to test your patterns. And we make that out of a cheaper fabric called calico. So we may need to do two or three toiles for the fitting. And then once we've got the fit perfect and we're happy with the fabric choices, etc., we'll then make the final garment and then deliver it to our client. So there's quite a few stages there.
Well, definitely. But also that sounds tremendously glamorous to somebody who's sort of an outsider looking in. But yeah. I think we need to be honest with ourselves a bit. I mean, the industry more broadly has actually faced a bit of criticism in recent times.
Yeah.
Fashion, mass production, cheap clothing, etc., low wages. Mm. I don't know if this is true, Gavin, but it also the second largest polluter in the world after the oil industry. I mean, there's a Sustain Your Star website.
Well, yeah.
Even if that's not the case, what can and should we be doing, I think, to reduce the negative environmental impacts of the fashion industry?
Yeah, the fashion industry is a very resource intensive industry, as you say, but there is a lot that we can do in order to kind of develop our own awareness of what we're wearing and what we're buying. I think the first thing to do is do a little bit of research or look into the brands that you like to buy from and the clothing that you like to wear. Are they a circular brand? So are they doing the most that they can to ensure that what they're producing is sustainable and that their supply chain has a minimum impact on the environment and also the people within the supply chain as well? So it's not just a case of polluting the world. It's also to ensuring that the people who are producing the clothes or producing the fibers or fabrics within that supply chain are also treated equally and equitably as well, so that their lived experience is as positive as it can be and that they're not exploited. So, if you have a look at a brand's website, Adidas are doing some interesting things, as well as G-Star, developing clothing from ocean plastic. Yep. It's about doing your own research and looking on the brand's website to see what they're doing in order to be and maintain some form of sustainability.
I mean, one of my first introductions to fashion was in the early punk days, when Vivienne Westwood was making clothes to Malcolm McLaren in King's Road. And to be fair, I'd never really thought about it until then, as most of what I wore came from either British Home Stores or CNA, both no longer in the high street. I mean, but the high that high street piece. I mean, how important is a high street, Gavin? And what will the switch to? You spoke about digital earlier, and what do you think the implications will be for online retail, for the fashion industry more generally?
I think it's a positive thing, really. I think the way that the fashion industry has responded to the pandemic has shown that we are able to cope more without face-to-face and having these lavish and expensive catwalk shows. We're able to, you know, use new methods of technology to design and make clothing as well, and I think that will have an impact on the high street. Whether the high street will last, I'm sure there'll also be always be a high street there, but definitely the way the high street is at the moment will change. You know, there's a lot of flagship stores that are closing down. We've recently seen Debenhams go bust. You know, John Lewis in Birmingham, I know, is closing down. So that need to be kind of face to face and feel and touch and try on that physical garment within a high street is changing.
Just thinking as you're saying that about how for our students, you know, maybe there's more opportunity. And earlier on, you just had to work for one or two big massive retailers, Topshop or whatever it happens to be. But I guess if you do your own stuff now and you can sell it online and do this bespoke internet-based marketing, then does that it seems to be that there's more opportunity perhaps for students than there was before this shake-up.
Definitely. I think the opportunities for fashion graduates is absolutely, it's still there. It's just the consumer aspect that I think is changing. The way that we purchase clothing and the way that we buy is changing, but as I say, with technology, the skills that a fashion graduate needs as well when they graduate is changing as well, and it is moving forward to, you know, understanding how fashion is responding to and incorporating technology within its development. So I think with our new fashion BA fashion program, you know, at Northampton, that is something that we're embedding. So Clo3D is a software package that we're utilizing and encouraging students to use. And what that does is enable students to design three-dimensionally on screen, so around the body and the form, using patterns and structure and shape, and you're able to kind of see it looks like a real life object. So you're creating this image, this digital image that looks three-dimensional real life, but doesn't actually exist, if that makes sense.
No, it's incredible. I mean, in terms of technology as well, I mean, you're involved with leather, you like leather as a material, you use it in your private work. And of course, we've got this amazing tannery at the University of Northampton, which makes us different from nearly any other university teaching fashion in the UK for sure. So where do you see that link then between leather and fashion? And, you know, what can students expect when they come to study with us, given that they've got these fantastic resources?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, if it hasn't changed recently, we are the only institution with a tannery on site, and that opens amazing opportunities and windows for our students at Northampton. You know, I've been down and used the facilities, you know, in the tannery on several occasions and done some of their short courses there, and to be able to have the access and the ability to take a raw kind of animal skin and take it through the processes until it's arrived at a finished hide, including like your own colorways, your own prints and textures, is an amazing opportunity. And, you know, to have the ability to do that at a university, I think, you know, there aren't any universities that can compete with us on that level. And I think that is something that our students have really utilized and embedded within their design work as well. So I think it's definitely really important for us at Northampton, having that leather there. I mean, we're the home of footwear, so why not? It's important that it exists where we are.
Exactly, couldn't agree more. Great, it's really good to see the fashion and the leather people coming together even more closely than
absolutely
they worked before. Gavin, it's time for your song of choice. Can you tell us what it is and why you chose it?
My song of choice is Chronix, and it's called Capture Land. It's a amazing song by an incredible artist, and it's a history lesson, really. It's about understanding, you know, some of the topics that we've covered today. We've talked about appropriation, why that may happen, etc. It's a history lesson, and it's really kind of developing a person's understanding about where we are today, why we are here, and how it's happened as well. So it's important that you listen to the lyrics really word for word.
Welcome back to Shout to the Top. I'm Nick Patford, and I'm joined by Gavin Douglas, Senior Lecturer in Fashion at the University of Northampton and Trustee of the Graduate Fashion Foundation. So, Gavin, can you tell us something about the projects that you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm working on a few projects at the moment. As well as being a lecturer at the university, I'm also co-chair of the Global Ethnic Majority Staff Network. And what we do at the Staff Network is we just meet up, maybe every 2 or 3 months. And it's an informal network where we just discuss and talk about the lived experiences of staff and students of colour within the institution. As part of the network, we've had several events and we do activities, so conferences and workshops. So anyone that, you know, it's a network that is open to all. You don't have to be a person of colour to be a member. So if anyone is interested in joining the network, do get in touch and I can tell you more about it there. As we've mentioned as well, I'm also an academic trustee on the Graduate Fashion Foundation Board, and that's an amazing opportunity. That started in October last year. And what we do there is we meet up every other month or so. We talk about how we can, you know, with my equality inclusion hat on, we talk about equality and inclusion within education, how we can embed that. And I also take some of my research into that role as well, which is fantastic to see. I'm also a council member of FACE, which is Fashion Academics Creating Equality. And what we do at FACE is we use our positions within education to talk about and discuss how we can embed equality, equity and inclusion within the curriculum.
Well, that's what a fantastic portfolio of activity, Gavin. Look, thanks so much. And also, I should say good luck with Graduate Fashion Week, which is coming up soon. And we've got our students involved. So any final thoughts on GFW?
Yeah, so Graduate Fashion Week, that's taking place shortly. So we've got a selection of great students who are involved, showcasing their work on the annual catwalk show. Really looking forward to that opportunity. That's another example of how fashion has responded to the pandemic as well, because you'll be able to watch the entire show online. You just need to register on the Graduate Fashion Week website, and you'll be able to watch the Northampton show, which is taking place on the 17th of June at 10:30 a.m.
That's fantastic. Gavin, many, many thanks, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, welcome back to Shout to the Top. Our next guest is Guy West. Guy, born and bred in Northampton, Guy's first business with his childhood friend Mark Jeffrey was a 16-year-old selling rejects and end-of-line shoes in factories around Northampton. And next, they started experimenting with their own designs, and in 1987, they founded their successful business, Jeffrey West. They currently have 6 stores, including one in Greenwich Village, New York, which opened in 2013. And Guy received an honorary fellowship in 2015 from the university for his contribution to the local economy and fashion footwear in particular. Guy, welcome to Shout to the Top.
Hello, Nick. I like your Paul Weller reference on this as well. It's all good.
Thank you very much. Well, let's start, Guy, with you as a young man. Clearly, entrepreneurial spirit. But what inspired you about footwear as a teenager?
Mostly it was sort of youth culture, because, you know, both Mark and myself, but that sort of 79, 80, 81, it was a huge melting pot. You had the sort of end of punk, end of disco, but there was a mod revival. There was even a bit of a Ted revival as well at the time. And then, you know, the new wave sort of started to come through, and Northampton had, you know, really one of the vanguards of new wave, which was Bauhaus, which we, you know, I certainly followed, and they were sort of our heroes at that time. So, you know, the majority influence came through that, with clothing and obviously subsequently footwear, and circumstantial, Northampton being the centre of the shoe trade. Obviously, it was something that I became interested in through Mark, because Mark's father actually had a factory at the time. And he and I hatched the idea of Jeffrey West really then.
Tell us about the early days and in your training in the fashion footwear industry.
I got a job when I was just, actually, I went for the interview just before my 17th birthday, and I'd been trying for a few months to even get into it. And I went along for the interview, and at the interview, I needed to be able to drive. Now, I'd got my my test booked for a week after my 17th birthday, so I told them I could already drive. So really, I got the job on the back of that I could drive, but I hadn't actually got my test at the time. So fortunately, I passed first time. So yeah, that was a bit of a gamble in itself. And then I started working for this company who were based on Moulton Park, called Rucci Shoes. who were an importer and of men's and ladies' shoes, and sort of started there on every aspect of the business, really, from sales, and then started what was called range building, and yeah, we took it from there, really.
It's great that you've grown your shops, but I imagine that COVID has put a dent in sales. So how have you managed the retail side over the last 12 months?
Yeah, it's been incredibly difficult, as you know, I'm sure anybody within the, you know, within the county will tell you who've got shops. But not only is it our own shops, but of course anybody that wholesales or any of the factories that wholesale, all our customers have been shut as well, and not only in the UK but all around the world. So peerage that everybody has lost has gone. And although we're sort of opened up, we're opening up again now, or we've opened up again now, we're still really only at 30% of where we should be. And that's mirrored right the way around the county, as far as I'm aware. So during the shutdown, we were trying to manage the situation. Obviously, we had the furlough with staff, which has been a brilliant scheme for all involved, really. But then also dealing with the landlords. You know, at first, the landlords wanted to just bury their heads in the sand, hope it would go away. So that was very trying at the time, because they all wanted full rent. You know, eventually, they obviously had to come round and start to negotiate with us all as retailers. So, you know, we're in a slightly better position than we were. And just fingers crossed that we don't go into another lockdown, because I think if we go into another lockdown, you know, the whole house of cards will start to fall over as far as the classic footwear industry is involved anyway.
Well, I think it's everything, isn't it? I think another lockdown will be just fundamentally disastrous for the entire economy. Absolutely. So I agree with you on that. In terms of online sales, Guy, I mean, do you have a strong web presence?
We do, yeah. And that's obviously the one sort of light that any of us have had. We've been up slightly on the internet, but not to the extent of, you know, like Boohoo or ASOS or people like that who are really at the bottom end of the market. Because, again, not just us, but anybody in the county, we're all selling a quality product. And the issue with the internet is that you've only got two standards of comparison. You've got the photograph and the price. Now, people like Boohoo or ASOS, you know, they can afford to pay the, you know, good looking models and great photographers. So, you know, you've got a fantastic looking picture, and then the price. You can't pick the product up and feel it, because footwear is quite emotive, but it's even to smell it with the leather. So for our kind of footwear, don't get me wrong, the internet's, you know, it is the future, but we do need retail as well, because we need people to be able to go into a shop and compare for themselves. You know, if they're picking something up that's, I don't know, a Chelsea boot and it's £40, and then there's a Northampton made, or, you know, or Italian made or whatever, and that's £400. It's a bit like buying a bottle of wine. You can have wine at £3, or you can have wine at £3,000. It's the subtlety of difference. But unless you can actually go and have that standard of comparison, picking it up and feeling it, you know, it's difficult for people to be able to judge. So from a quality point of view, we do definitely still need our retail. However, we need that arm of the sales on online as well.
Yeah, to complement. Well, Northampton, famous, of course, for its quality footwear, but mostly men's fashion. Why is that? Is it historical buy-in? Do you see opportunities for growth in women's shoes as well?
Yeah, it is historical, obviously, as you've said. I think that quite a few of the factories now have got very strong ladies' ranges, whether they're Goody Welted or they've started to do some more casual side, which there will be huge growth in that as well. You know, if you look at Church's collection now, or you look in their shops, you know, it looks to me anyway, they're sort of 40% ladies, although most of that's made in Italy, I believe. But from what I understand, they are going to bring some of that production into Northampton on a Blake Stitch construction. So I think there's a good future for that. But as far as high heels, they really won't ever be that, well, they won't ever, you can never say that, but because there's no infrastructure, there's no real heel manufacturers, or there's no trim manufacturers. And yes, of course, you can import it from Italy or Spain, but we don't really have the support industry to make ladies' high heel shoes, certainly not in Northampton anymore.
I can't not mention Kinky Boots, Guy. And we had Joe Gordon from the Royal Dirndl on last month talking about how the show was launched in Northampton, not Manchester. Absolutely the right thing. I'd seen it advertised actually on Broadway at Kinky Boots, which is, you know, not far from your shop in the West Village. So your thoughts on that, Guy? What has the show done for the image of fashion footwear and Northampton in particular?
Well, you know, obviously Northampton, it sort of put us on the map a little bit with people that didn't know of around the world. If anybody's into sort of budget welted footwear or men's footwear, they would have known of Northampton. But of course, that's a very small percentage. So anybody that saw the show obviously now associates Northampton with footwear manufacturing, albeit a different manufacturing to what we actually are. Because obviously, in you know, Steve Pateman, Mark and I know Steve quite well, and his factory really was more about making work boot influence shoes rather than high heels, although he did have a go at it. But yeah, I think that it's certainly lifted the image of Northampton, albeit not really in the kind of shoes that we actually make here. But in overall, it's been it's been a fantastic, you know, promotion for the town, I think.
I mean, you've been a very strong supporter of the university, Guy, over the years, and training the next generation of fashion footwear students is important to you. So where do you see the industry going in the next decade, and what kind of skills should we be focusing on to get our students into the top jobs?
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, the conversation, whether we're talking about Northampton manufacturing or footwear trade in general, I think probably more the footwear trade in general, which, as we know, is really now skewed towards casual or sports footwear. So, you know, from what I understand anyway, not that I'm really involved in it, but CGI is becoming so much more important. And especially if people aren't going to be traveling out to the Far East as much. So they're going to be, you know, having to produce virtual collections. And obviously within that virtual collection, you're going to have to be thinking about presentation, about styling, and then, you know, photography will also come into it. So I think that certainly the designers of the future aren't just going to be sitting there designing footwear. They're going to have so many more aspects to their skills, which is, I'm sure, what you're addressing at the moment at the university. I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, if you work for Penton, I'm sure they're going to have people that do CGI or they're going to have their photographers, but everybody's, you know, is going to have a basic understanding of that. And also if at any point one of your students wants to actually go out on their own and do their own brand, you know, to keep the cost low, they're going to have to do all those things themselves. Like I say, whether it's presentation, whether it's styling, the photography, you know, the online presence, it's so much more involved now than just sitting there sort of drawing pictures of shoes, that's for sure.
It's interesting, when you and Mark started out, it was very much an analog world, wasn't it? You know, taking physical bits of shoes and changing them and restyling them. Now, of course, 21st century is digital. So different opportunities for students. And, you know, when I sort of think about it, perhaps there is an analogy to what you were doing early on in your entrepreneurial days, where somebody could do their own design, 3D print some shoes or some prototypes, and then sell it themselves on the internet without necessarily, you know, being involved with the bigger brands. I mean, do you think that's something which you might see more of in future?
I sincerely hope so. Yeah, I really do. Because, you know, obviously the big brands have got a stranglehold, even whether it's the big brands, you know, in the Nike and the Adidas is the world, but even within the retail, you know, you've got JD Sports and Sports Direct, you know, they're swallowing up everything really within sort of men's footwear and men's clothing. So there has to be a little bit of a backlash against that. And I think that, you know, if there are these much smaller, more intimate brands, and also the whole thing about, you know, the American influence, the big LA brands, you know, that you know, they are really at the moment, they are the predominant driver of fashion, really, anything that's out of LA. And again, there will be a backlash, you know, going back to what we were talking about, the 80s or what happened in the, you know, with the Britpop era, you know, I think there will be a Brit backlash on that kind of thing, which will be down to your students trying to do their own thing and do something that's much more British.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope University of Northampton and, of course, Geoffrey West are at the forefront of that new revolution in fashion footwear. Guy West, many thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Nick.
Welcome back to Shout to the Top with me, Nick Petford, here on NLive Radio. My next guest is Dr. Mike Redwood. Mike's father was a tanner in Glasgow, and Mike studied leather science at the University of Leeds. He's worked in senior positions in tanneries around the world in a variety of sectors and with different raw material types. His career moved from technology into general management and marketing, and he now holds an MBA and PhD from the University of Bath. And he was visiting professor at the University of Northampton from 2003 until 2018. In recent years, Mike has helped organisations in areas around sustainability, strategy and innovation, along with writing commentaries on the leather industry for various magazines and trade bodies. He's a founding spokesperson of Leather Naturally, set up to educate consumers about leather and to promote its benefits. Well, Mike, welcome to the show.
Nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure. And Mike, the leather industry has been around, well, you can correct me, but for at least 500 years in the UK, perhaps much longer if you include the Romans, has a fascinating history and is closely associated with Northampton and Northamptonshire. However, some have accused it of being a sunset industry in the UK, especially as much of the production is now in Asia. So Mike, what is the current status of leather manufacturing here in Britain?
Well, I should just correct you first, Nick, but as far as I know and I understand and the documents I've seen, the leather industry long predates the Romans here in the UK. But when the Romans came, they did bring a lot of design and ideas, and they were here so long they had to get involved in the industry here, and they gave it a great boost. And I have a colleague who made herself a pair of boots using, it's her expertise, using the original construction and design of Roman boots found in Carlisle that they used on the wall, the Hadrian's Wall, and she walked it and said they were perfectly serviceable today to go back and forth across the wall. And, now leather's been a ubiquitous needed material because it was the first sheet material that humans ever had, if you think about it, long before textiles and pottery and other things, hides and skins were the only big pieces of material that they had to make tents or to make clothing and footwear out of if they wanted to travel any distances. And by 500 years ago, just in Northampton, we understand that the industry was making boots and shoes for both sides in the Civil War, and wonderful oil tanned coats of European buffalo to protect under the armor and for the officers to be used as armor standing a bit at a distance in the battles in those centuries.
So that was a historical aspect of it, Mike. Thank you for the correction. So what about the current status then here in Britain, leather manufacturing?
Well, the current situation is that in the 20th century, our industry moved from being world lead to being overtaken fairly rapidly with some new technologies that, curiously enough, were invented by British companies, although one of the inventions was in the United States, but at the suggestion of and in factories owned by a British company. Early in the 20th century, Britain became third, both Germany and the United States. And then as the century went on, the footwear and leather goods and garment industry began to chase cheap labor in the third world, encouraged by the United Nations, who made arrangements to give it cheap grants. And that all coincided at a moment when all of our factories, all of our tanneries were old buildings in the center of towns that were expanding fast. And tanneries need space to expand, to develop, and in the 1970s and 80s needed extra space to build environmental treatment plants as the laws changed and we began to understand all the requirements. So there was a generation change going on, and a lot of the tanneries decided to close as new ones were being built on greenfield sites, much more efficient because of single story and good layouts in all parts of the world. So in this last 30 years of the 20th century, we took a big hit. What's left in the UK is really top skills. So we have the world's top gloving leather tannery. We have the world's top suede manufacturers. And we have certainly one of the world's absolutely leading upholstery manufacturer specializing in automobiles and aviation and transportation in general. So what's left is much smaller, but is really, really excellent. And I think looking forward now, we're hoping that we can start to see some growth because we export far too many raw hides and raw skins. There is a need and a pressure to get more of those tanned here in the UK.
So, Mike, as I explained, leather is obviously a natural material, but as a byproduct of the meat industry, it's come under attack from various animal rights groups. So what should the response of the industry be to this kind of criticism?
Well, the first thing the industry should do is actually respond, because for most of my career, the industry's refused to respond and just quietly got on tanning the skins and hides as they come available from the meat and dairy product industry. Because as you say, it's a non-determining product and nobody keeps animals for the hides of skins, for the 99.5% of the leather we make, which is bovine or sheep or goat or pig, which are our primary raw materials. In the last 10 years, we've begun to get serious about trying to challenge some of these anti-leather people. First of all, that it's rather false to attack leather when it's effectively handling a byproduct or a waste product from another another industry. And secondly, because an awful lot of what they're saying about both animal agriculture, livestock agriculture, and also about the leather industry is historic or false or cherry-picked facts to create a false narrative. So hence, that's why we got going with leather naturally, to try and correct the narrative with good science. And the industry in leather is quite a fragmented one and quite a small one. So we don't have the wealth to take on some of these huge animal rights organization and some of the very fanatical vegan ones. So we don't aim to battle them head on in every single instance. We do work very, very hard to produce good educational material that we're hoping will spread through the world and through the industry and be used and be used in places like in your courses, and also to set up a community approach that gets at the digital generations. So we've set up a new newsletter, which is digital, a magazine called Mecha, which is beginning to create big waves amongst younger generations around the world who watch it through various social media channels directly.
Mike, there's this developing idea of green leather, where the entire supply chain, that's from the animal to the finished product, is scrutinised for its carbon footprint and its sustainability. So how important is it to get these ideas, as you've explained, out there in front of consumers? And what should brands be doing to promote it?
Well, in a way, I would think that all leather is green. I actually believe, and I think the industry's come to recognise that as long as we make the leather responsibly and properly, it is one of the most sustainable materials available in the world, and an essential material at this moment in time if we want to protect both the planet from climate change and biodiversity loss. I imagine what you're meaning when you talk about green is in terms of the new ESG thinking, environmental, social and governance, where we try to audit the supply chain to make sure that each stage is done as well as possible. And in the main, that's pushing us towards thinking about regenerative agriculture as the area from where we should obtain our livestock, care in manufacture, that we're handling chemicals and people properly, and at every stage there's no modern day slave labor, and considering the product through to its end of life. But of course, with leather, its end of life is very, very different from the alternates, because any properly made leather item should be easily maintained, easily repaired, and go on pretty much forever. And certainly at its end of life. It should be able, if you want to decide it's had an end of life, a bag or a seat, the leather should be capable of being repurposed into small leather goods and other items. And that is increasingly happening.
More broadly, leather clearly is an integral part of the fashion industry as a material that's used in design, in shoes, coats, bags, etc. Do you think there's some evidence that fashion creatives have been hit by Brexit and certainly by COVID? The argument's been put forward that that's the case. And if so, do you think that the UK government has done enough to support the fashion industry over the last 12 to 15 months?
I'm not at all convinced that successive governments really understand industry at all. And I do think in the last 30 years, our industrial policy has been driven from not very good, almost zero. Now, there are one or two outstanding efforts going on in the alternative energy area. And I do get a sense that out of the pandemic, there's a recognition that governments will have to start playing a much bigger role in how our economy and our society are integrated together. And, you know, I think we're seeing it in the way the Treasury and the Bank of England are working more closely together now. But I don't think that any sectors come terribly well out of the last few years. And I think the creative sector, since it's got so many self-employed people, have particularly struggled through the pandemic because a lot of self-employed seem to fall through the net in the last 15 months. And I do worry about Brexit in as much as, you know, proximity to Paris and Milan and the rest and integration has been important. And now for certain types of travel, we can go over for meetings and events, okay. But if we're going over to earn our income, it's harder to get, you're going to have to get industry visas and be limited only to certain lengths of time. So I don't know how that'll affect the fashion industry, but a lot of the creative people that I know, musicians and things, are deeply worried and think that this whole service sector has been totally ignored in Brexit. So there is quite a bit of worry, and hopefully that can be corrected.
Yep, there is some concerns out there. So it's not just Brexit, of course, it's the period of COVID, 12 to 15 months, that's really also put a spanner in the works in those for those industries.
I think it's been a real struggle. But on the other hand, with the Hong Kong Leather Show, whom I like a lot, they hold an annual design competition, and it was held online last year for designing bags of leather, a bag in leather. And the winner came from Central St. Martin, and I interviewed her the other day. She did an outstanding bag, an outstanding understanding of materials that she had. And I think she's about, as soon as COVID permits, to head off to take her prize, which is some work in Milan with the Arts College there. But she's also partly through that been able to take up an apprenticeship role with Louis Vuitton in France. So there are routes that young people can get round, and that side of the leather industry, where people are making things and designing things from it and redesigning and putting their minds to understanding the material, I think there's a tremendous future available if we can integrate it all together. So it's not just, say, like a university like you that you're teaching leather. It's recognition that, you know, 100 people in a tannery provide work, good quality work, interesting and artistic, creative work for normally quite a few thousand people using the material. And that's one of the beautiful things about leather, that it does create so much long-term employment opportunity in its use.
So, Michael, my final question touches on that, really. You know, at the University of Northampton, we have a strong fashion department. We've got leather. We've got the only tannery, working tannery, teaching research tannery, I think, in Europe now. But how can the university develop even closer links between the leather and the fashion side that will benefit students?
Well, I do think you kind of see it a little bit in the work going on in Leather UK and the Worshipful Company of Leather Sellers, that they've begun to integrate into their thinking the design and manufacture elements. And I think it's this integration, it's getting away from the silos. And in a way, when I first became involved with you at Northampton, with your predecessor, the university was very much in silos. I think you've got it less now. And one of the first jobs that your predecessor gave me was a series of appointments to go marching around and talk to every faculty and every department about, you know, how leather integrates into their lives, because she recognized that in terms of teaching that, you know, obviously you've got fantastic strengths in police and nursing, but in standard courses like management and other things and fashion, you are one of many universities teaching it. But with leather, you've got a unique proposition, and leather does integrate into all these areas very, very closely. I don't think you can dictate what students want to use. If you've got fashion students that feel leather is wrong for them for all the reasons that we mentioned, then that's their personal ethical decision. But I think you can work hard to explain to them what the truth is and that they have to take a scientific view. And I think you can have fantastic strength if you focus on the collaboration that can be done between leather teaching, the fashion and artistry involved in designing leathers, and in terms of using leathers. And I think one of the nicest examples of how that's going to happen at a national industrial leather level in the UK and links into your green leather is Mulberry's announcement on Earth Day 2 weeks ago about how it is going to start using leather from Scotland, the tanning industry in Scotland, actually from the tannery that my father was managing when I grew up, the one I used to go to occasionally after school. And they are working with that tannery using Scottish grass-fed cattle, going to make their leather goods here in Somerset, where I'm talking from, and they're going to look harder to make them more repairable and to last longer, to do the repair, to do the refurbishment, and to do swaps and changes at end of life, so that the bags never die and the leather never gets thrown away. And I think when you see that integration, which involves a huge amount of creativity and an equal amount of excellent, carefully thought through science, then you see the way that you can emulate it in education, but you can also offer fabulous jobs to students.
Mike Redwood, many thanks.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back to Shout to the Top with me, Nick Petford, here on NLive 106 FM and streaming over the internet. Now, today we're talking about fashion, and I'm joined now by two fashion academics and practitioners from the university, Jane Mills and Emmeline Childs. We'll also be joined a bit later on by some of our final year fashion students who will be exhibiting at Graduate Fashion Week, which runs from June the 12th to June the 18th in London, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary. And I should also say this is the first time since doing this show that we are recording in person from a studio, all socially distanced, of course. Right. Jane Mills. So Jane holds a first-class honours degree in fashion and textiles from the University of Northampton. She has an MA in textile design, postgraduate certificate for academic practice in higher education, and is a fellow of the Higher Education Academy. And Jane's expertise are in colour, design, textiles for fashion, and fashion products. An acclaimed textile designer in her own right, Jane has been awarded the Society of Dyers and Colourists Medal for creative and innovative use of colour in fashion design education, and was the 2018 winner of the Society of British and International Design Visionary Tutor of the Year Award. Her collaborative research background investigates synesthesia, if I've said that right, I'm hoping I have, and the human perception, experience and interpretation of colour. Jane is also interested in the development of future skills sets through the use of video technology and its blended delivery within the creative arts learning environment. Jane, welcome.
Hello, Nick. Hi.
The second guest is Emmeline Charles. Emmeline is programme leader for fashion at the University of Northampton. Emmeline is a pioneer in sustainable issues around upcycling, and we'll ask her about that in a second. Upcycling in the fashion industry. She developed the upcycled label Emmeline for Re in 2003, selling her collections in Topshop and independent retailers across the UK and Europe. She then went on to establish her own sustainable boutique in London and is currently a PhD candidate at Chelsea School of Art, feeding into the research hub, the Centre of Circular Design at UAL. Emmeline has taught in the UK and India and Sri Lanka in areas of sustainability, fashion and design. She is an external examiner across fashion and fashion marketing programmes and presents and exhibits on sustainable topics internationally. We've got two super academics here. What fantastic CVs there. Just some general questions, and I'm going to ask either of you to jump in first. Do you think, Jane and Emmeline, do you think UK designers are a global force, or does more need to be done to promote British fashion? Who wants that one?
Do you want to start, Emmeline, and I'll cut in?
Yeah, can do. Thank you, Jane. Yeah, so the fashion industry is a global industry, and therefore there are big players everywhere. Traditionally, London, Paris, New York, Tokyo, there were these kind of global dominators. However, this is now shifting. Currently, China is the largest consumer of luxury fashion by a long way, and we're seeing other major nations gaining greater confidence and profile globally, both as producers and consumers in fashion. That being said, the Britishness of design is still a global pull, and the quality of the UK art and design education continues to dominate most of the global rankings.
Jane, how do you feel?
Well, UK has a vast talent resource, and the major challenge that that kind of talent has faced is finding a viable outlet for its creativity. But that's changed. A lot of that has changed in terms of the power of social media, and a lot of designers can build a successful and rewarding career and create very successful kind of careers in terms of using the power of social media. So, for example, a high profile example of that power of social media would be Gymshark. Two university students started a business in their bedroom and through the power of media became a £1 billion business, which was, you know, that just kind of illustrates how powerful social media can be.
That's absolutely right. And Gavin was talking a bit earlier about the power of social media and some of this. Gavin also works at the university in fashion. So the second question to both of you then, digital fashion, we've talked a bit about that. I mean, the fact that the high street is perhaps in decline, maybe post-COVID, maybe it was in decline before COVID. What's the opportunities for digital fashion? Or are you even fans of something called digital fashion? Jane, what do you think?
We live in a digital age, and fashion has always reflected the contemporary age. To create solutions, it kind of embraces, it develops, and it utilises technology. That could be from ethical working practices through to animal husbandry to garment manufacture. The use of digital technology goes back to the early 18th century. The invention of the Jacquard loom used punch cards to produce very, very complex textiles. And it was those punch cards that was the inspiration for Charles Babbage to create his analytical machine, his analytical engine. And it considered as the world's first programmable computer. So you could say that fashion led the creation of the digital age.
Oh, that's a good claim. I like that one. Thank you. Emmeline, how do you feel about it?
Well, from a sustainable point of view, it's one method where we can greater implement and streamline the practices within fashion. The fashion industry has changed little since that industrial revolution, but we're on the cusp of the 4.0 revolution within fashion, which is going to completely change our understanding of fashion and the supply chain. We'll be able to follow the materials from mill right through to that end product and disposal. And this will give us greater insight into one of the most complicated supply chains in the world. Locally in the department, we're also embedding technologies such as Clothe 3D, where students can effectively twirl, which is making those kind of prototypes of their garments without ever having to cut material. So this is a really exciting development, and we're really kind of getting the students ready for the kind of new digital industry that they'll be going into.
So both a positive response, and I think from you guys about digital fashion and the way that's going to develop, and also I guess how we then teach our students to work in this kind of creative way. And on that, there have been calls from some of the governments to invest in and not squander bright creative minds of the classes of 2021 and 2022. This is to do with COVID and fashion practical courses in general, I guess. What would you like to see being done, both of you, to support the next generation of talent? And perhaps I can ask Emmeline first.
Yeah, well, art and design is so important. And actually, COVID and the lockdown has really, really, really reinforced that to us. You know, it was art, music, literature that we turned to when there was nothing else. Everything around us is designed in some way. And in fashion and in many parts of the society, we are seeing a need and a demand for change. And it will be those creative minds working with policymakers and scientists that will shape the future. Universities need to continue to encourage and support this critical thinking and questioning nature that is so evident in the design field, and allow these voices to have the confidence to be heard.
That's great. Jane, what do you think should be done to help support this next generation of talent coming through?
Well, yes, I mean, absolutely what Emmeline says. But I think also the most effective contribution that the government could make is to recognise that the majority of academic courses, in terms of like creative courses like fashion and textiles, their students incur significant additional costs for materials and services. And they do that in order to cover the development and the production of their designs. And these costs are, you know, these day-to-day costs and above their tuition fees, they can amount to hundreds and hundreds of pounds. So the current student loan fails to recognise this, and it can be an impediment and a disincentive to those students who wish to go on to creative courses.
That's a good point. So the funding of design more generally, but fashion in particular, could become an issue.
Yes.
If we're not careful. I want to pick up a couple of questions now on you've got very diverse and different research backgrounds. But Jane, let's start with you first. I mentioned in the introduction this idea, and I hopefully I've said it right. I wasn't joking. It's synesthesia. Can you tell us what that is and how does that relate to fashion?
Well, synesthesia. Yeah, you did say it right. Absolutely right. It's a huge subject, and I think it would take a longer session to explain all of it. It's just vast. Basically, in a nutshell, what it is, it's a crossing of the senses. And the link that my research took me into was the link to creativity. And if you look, at synesthetes, and I'm a synesthete, so I was looking at it from a personal perspective. And I wanted to understand how that impacted on me in terms of my work, how I perceived colour, how I perceived line and texture, all of those things, and how that all worked. And the other thing I was looking at was, you know, famous, if you look at, famously Kandinsky, Pharrell, he attributes his synesthesia to be able to write the song Happy. He couldn't have done it without synesthesia. Lady Gaga, David Hockney, incredible use of colour. And I was really interested to see how that worked, the kind of synesthete mind, how that impacted on creativity. The only thing with that is, when you reveal that you're a synesthete yourself, you start to then become the curiosity. So therefore, you know, you start to explain what your colour, your day of the week is, your number, and all of these things that you kind of attribute to your synesthesia. And that, you know, it's fine, but then it can get in the way a little bit. So and I don't know what it's like not to have it. So it's because it's with me, it's always been with me. And if I was I suppose it's like wearing rose-tinted glasses all your life. If you take it off, if my synesthesia disappeared, then I have no idea what would be left. And I don't know if that would affect or impact on my creativity.
So are you seeing a colour now, Jane?
Well, words I hear, yes, it's a colour hearing. So, and also the linguistic personification. So letters and numbers have personalities. And so it all starts to get a little bit kind of mad and bonkers, I suppose, but they do, and they always have done. And the more I've researched about it, the more I understand it. And I've done conferences with the UK Synesthesia Association. We get lots of requests from creative students, graphic design students, quite a lot of, in terms of wanting to interview us to find out more about it. But yes, I mean, today, Tuesday, red, I mean, no question. Well, that's it, you know.
It's incredible. Emmeline, over to you. I mean, sustainable fashion is a hot topic right now. And I was reading, Emmeline, that the average garment is worn just 8 times before being thrown away. Well, whoever wrote that clearly didn't look in my wardrobe. But surely that's unsustainable.
Yeah, it is, to be quite honest. And that's why we're seeing a shift in the way that retailers are operating. This isn't an issue so much with high end. It's the mass market, fast fashion, the high street, where the throwaway culture dominates. Also, this throwaway society creates waste. Currently, we export 350,000 tonnes of used textile a year in the UK alone, as well as sending about the same to landfill. In the UK, our landfills are set to be filled up in 2022. So there's a sizable and real issue looming that we need to address. So systemic change implementation through policy is absolutely needed. This is why something called the SCAP plan, which was the Sustainable Clothing Action Plan, was such an instrumental document that was setting out the sort of vision for fashion in the future, where a lot of these issues were very much highlighted. And that was sort of completed in 2020. And now we've got the Textiles 2030 document that is seeking to really work with experts and industry leaders to implement pilot schemes for the new fashion future. I myself are really fortunate enough to be working on one of these projects. So we at the university are at the forefront of implementing sustainable strategies into the fashion industry.
Look, that's a fantastic answer. And what with the high street chains folding, I mean, Topshop's gone recently, Arcadia Group in trouble, and opportunities maybe for students, and we'll hear from the students in a second, to design their own clothes, sell them online, market them online, perhaps in a more sustainable way. I mean, do you think, well, both of you, Jane and Emmeline, that we might be moving away from the mass fast fashion era into something which is a bit more bespoke? People are prepared to pay a bit more money, more premium, in order to effectively save the planet through fashion?
It's really complicated, Nick. There's 7 billion people on the planet and we all need to wear clothes. So there is a place for fast fashion, but it's about really addressing what fast fashion is. And maybe fast fashion becomes really fast. You know, this idea of using things and disposing of them, if they are biodegradable, then it won't be an issue if we dispose them. So it's about what we make our fast fashion out of that's going to be the real shift moving forward. Yes, of course, these changes that are happening in the high street gives us massive opportunities. And, you know, I keep saying to the students, this is an amazing time to go out and really reshape the future of fashion, because there are changes happening. And the high street that we see now, or have seen in the last couple of years, it's been accelerated somewhat by COVID, is not going to be the reality of the high street that we see in 10 years' time. So there's an amazing opportunity for these students to get out there and really dominate and change the face of fashion.
Jane, any thoughts?
Yeah, again, I think I'd go back to when we were talking about digital fashion. Again, you know, fashion industry has always reflected the contemporary age. So therefore, we look, you know, the digital age is going to revolutionise it in terms of what is going to be happening in fashion. You know, it will probably move so far forward that maybe that, you know, creating garments on avatar, maybe that's what we'll be doing. And the technology is already known in terms of everybody will order, you know, it'll be kind of made to order. So that will then cut down on quite a lot of waste. So I think, you know, 5 to 10 years, 20 years time, the digital age, it's only just really started.
We mentioned students already, so we're delighted to be joined today by two third-year students. We've got Natasha and Jonathan here in the studio with us, who are preparing avidly for Graduate Fashion Week, which is coming up very quickly. So can I start with Natasha?
Hello.
Natasha. Hi, Natasha.
Hi.
Can you tell us about your designs for Graduate Fashion Week?
So my designs are based from dreams. So throughout the lockdown, I noticed that my dreams were taking a strange turn and being really weird compared to normal. And I decided to go on social media and ask if anyone else was feeling the same. And it turns out that it was. And I think from all the stress, the anxiety, it was having an impact on our dreams when we were sleeping. And then from that, I basically drew a physical dream journal of everyone's dreams, and I'm a textiles designer, so I mainly focus on print, and that was what my dreams were used as for the print for my garments.
Just shows you how your own personality and psychology feeds into your creative motivations to design. What an extraordinary story. Jonathan, do you have any similar? Have you been dreaming about fashion lately?
Not too much, unfortunately, but my final year project was pretty much based on Akon City, where it's due to be finished within the next century or so. So I pretty much looked about what will happen to the sort of like the local communities and how basically they will survive in a society that's pretty much like made to throw them out, really, where it's pretty much a playground for millionaires, really. So I've really just gone like I've taken it from a different perspective, really.
I'll ask a question next to you then, Jonathan, back to Natasha. Second question really is, Graduate Fashion Week is massively high profile, it's all over the press. What personally do you want to get out of Fashion Week?
Personally, I just want the recognition of pretty much showing people what could happen to a small community, really, how like big corporations come and build on their land, really. So that's pretty much what my concept is basically about, just bringing awareness really to millionaires and money, really.
That's just quite a radical agenda in some respects. You know, you see the people who reach the top of the fashion industry and it's very glamorous. My perception is they're hugely rich, flying around the world in jets and all the rest of it. And so you're kind of a critique of some of that behaviour or that kind of culture. Is that where you're coming from with this?
I mean, yeah, it's always good to obviously take your sort of like concept from a different point of view. So it's always good to challenge questions and challenge what people seem to see the future is meant to be. Like, obviously, right now we do have a race of a lot of billionaires and millionaires getting into power. So I just want everyone to see what can happen to pretty much like lower income communities and stuff like that, and what is pretty much the reality, really.
It's interesting what you say, because a lot of it ties in somehow with some aspects of the fast fashion industry, because a lot of the employment and the cheap labour that's involved in fast fashion, you could also criticise as well.
It's pretty much seen as like how fast fashion is seen as disposable.
Yeah.
My concept sees the communities pretty much as disposable as well. So it's pretty much just challenging those sort of like point of views, really.
So how do you, by the way, I will be at Graduate Fashion Week with you all, June the 12th to 18th in King's Cross in London.
Yeah.
So I'll be looking forward to seeing your stuff. How do you design a garment to reflect your thoughts and views?
So what I've pretty much done is I pretty much looked at the sort of like the housing that's already there in Senegal, which is basically where Akon City is going to be built, and pretty much looked at the people, mainly the sort of like the younger sort of people from Senegal, but also looked at the buildings that are going to be made from Akon City, which really is sort of like groundbreaking architecture. So looking at the shapes and how tall it stands in the ground pretty much kind of influenced me and the sort of like styles and seams that I've kind of messed around with on my garments. So that's pretty much where I've taken my inspirations for creating the sort of like garments and like items in my collection.
And Natasha, similar question to you then. What do you hope to get out of Graduate Fashion Week?
To be honest, I'm really open-minded. I think it's just like a great opportunity to even be selected and having your garments placed on a catwalk in front of such great audiences, all we can really ask for as an upcoming fashion designer. Really open-minded and just ready to take any opportunity that sort of comes my way.
A final question to both of you. Fashion is a very practical subject, it's a tactile subject.
Mm-hmm.
It must be pretty hard to teach it over the internet, and yet vast swathes of British higher education have been partially closed or fully closed for the last 12 months. So a bit of a personal question to you, but Jonathan, how have you coped then in terms of a third year student with all the pressures of getting a fashion show, a catwalk show together, but doing it partly online? How has that been?
I mean, it's been tough, especially with everyone that's done not just fashion, but any sort of other degree in university. It's pretty much just trying to keep yourself busy. Having your own sort of space and your own sort of bubble has been pretty much the sort of like pushing me forward, and pretty much having like the friends and family there to support you as well. I mean, throughout lockdown, we did have some sort of like FaceTime calls with some of our peers as well. So it's been really good to sort of like bounce back ideas and pretty much just have normal conversations as we would, but just virtually, really.
Natasha, how do you feel about that?
I think it's the same as what Jonathan said, really. At first, it was really difficult trying to adjust, but that is when you can be your most creative, when you're in a situation like the pandemic, you're sat there and all you do have is your imagination. And I think going back to me being obviously a print designer, that was really just, I had so much free time to just sit there and draw and draw and draw as much as I wanted to draw. And yeah, we did have sessions with our tutors. They were really good, kind of touch base weekly. But I think also you realise that you have to sort of step up and take everything like you're doing it yourself, and there's no one there that's going to, you know, sort of take you through that. And it gives you the motivation that you need throughout the pandemic. So,
well, look, thanks to my studio guests, Jane and Emmeline, and our fashion students, Natasha and Jonathan. And best of luck, guys, in Graduate Fashion Week in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm pleased to say that since we recorded that session, both Jonathan and Natasha, along with two footwear students from the University of Northampton, have been shortlisted for Graduate Fashion Week Awards 2021. For Jonathan in the Culture and Heritage section, and Natasha for the YKK Accessories Award for her printed textile accessories. So good luck to both. Well, thank you to all of my contributors for a fascinating insight into the world of fashion. I think what we've learned is that while the industry has a well-deserved reputation for glamour and digital fashion offers real opportunities, I think more needs to be done to increase diversity in the talent pool and to reduce the environmental impact of fast fashion. Looking forward to the next show and following the creation on the 1st of April 2021 of two unitary authorities in Northamptonshire, and on the back of the local elections in May, the theme next month is politics. Not my favourite topic, I confess, but I'm pleased to be joined by a fantastic lineup of local councillors, plus special guest, the Right Honourable Justin Greening. So remember, wherever you are in the UK or in the South Pacific, until next time,